You're listening to Screen Heroes on the Heroes Podcast Network.
Sup, dudes? Welcome to Screen Heroes. I am Ray, and I am joined by my two very masculine and handsome hosts,
ooh.
Ryan.
Hello.
And Derek.
Yo.
How are you guys tonight?
Masculine and handsome.
We did not plan that.
Yes, you are.
We've done this a couple of times.
Yeah,
I loved it. I want that to be my new ringtone.
Masculine and handsome, yeah. in like surround sound.
Yeah, it was beautiful. It was harmonized.
The fact that we did it together like that reminded me of Airplane. You know, it's an entirely different kind of flying all together.
Yeah.
You were really hoping that we were going to do it.
I was not going to do it.
No, I was not.
It was landing in a bottle. You don't get it.
Yeah, you guys let me down. It's fine. I forgive you.
All right. Well, while Derek mopes, I'm going to kind of tell you what's going on. So tonight we are reviewing Venom. If you haven't checked out Venom yet, then maybe you want to just hang out for the news portion. Put us on pause, go see the movie right now. There's still showings on Tuesday nights. And then come back and view the rest of it.
Don't forget, though, if you don't want spoilers, you could check out our Venom quick movie take.
Absolutely. We did a quick video just giving you our fast and easy and cheap reviews.
Super
cheap.
Just
like all of us. Yeah. Fast, easy, and cheap.
It's not far off.
Fantastic. So that's available on our YouTube channel. You can find the link at heroespodcasts.com.
Absolutely. And it's also posted all over our social media. So if that's just what you follow and you don't actually go to real websites anymore, that's fine too. So in the news, first off, the box office numbers, Venom took the number one position with 80 million. Stars Born with 41, which, you know, more than tripled its budget. And Smallfoot is still holding strong. Apparently, Channing Tatum as a Yeti is something people wanted. So, I mean, I wasn't asking for it, but I'm sure there's an audience out there. So that's cool.
I mean, it was the only, like, legitimate kids movie
that
came out this weekend. So that's not, like, super shocking. But
so let's address this first. Venom is at 31% on Rotten Tomatoes by critics. 89% by audience. Now, depending on how we do this, since they don't merge their scores like the other aggregate sites, we all took a bet last week on what Venom was going to get. And I said 29%. Ryan said 38%. Derek said 50%.
So it's 50 to 60%.
You don't Derek got to take a range for some reason.
10%. We're going with your lower.
Well, I'll do 55.
Yeah, we're going with your lower.
Five.
Now, if we just go by Rotten Tomatoes critics, then I win. If we go by a combination of the two, then
I win.
Derek is the winner.
Woo! My average, if you take the average, it's 59.5%.
Yes.
So
what do
you think, 50?
And that's much closer.
But you know, going by Price is Right rules where you can't go over.
I didn't go over.
Or they go over. Well, whatever. We're going by reverse Price is Right rules.
True.
Whatever.
I don't know what version you need to go with.
So, Ryan, what do you want to do?
What do I want to do?
Yeah, like if...
For Derek? Nothing.
Well, it's hurtful.
Well, I was supposed to make baked goods for the winner for next week. Should I make baked goods that I pick out for myself and then you guys just enjoy them next week?
Yeah, I think that's the best plan.
But I was the closest.
Only if we combine.
I was the closest to the critic score.
But I was the closest to the audience score and the average score. I got two out of the three possible scores.
All right. Vote on which host from the HPN you would like to have replace Derek starting next week.
I'll take the night off. It's fine.
Let's move on. Other news. New York Comic Con was this weekend, and a lot of really cool TV show trailers dropped.
Yep. New Daredevil trailer was probably my favorite.
Yes. It was really
it was awesome. It basically confirmed that Bullseye is the villain and that he's dressing up as... It's implied that he's dressing up as Daredevil. I don't think they don't show him taking the mask off or anything. But
you wouldn't want to do that in the trailer.
Also, one of the actors went up and drew I think Charlie Cox drew the Bullseye symbol on the other actor's forehead during the panel.
That's funny.
So, yeah, that was good stuff.
I did not know that. That's funny.
Yeah, but the trailer was great. So I'm very excited for that show. It comes out in, 2 weeks?
Absolutely. Yeah, really
19th,
soon.
Right?
Is it?
October 19th?
Yeah.
Pretty soon.
Really soon. Two of the shows I'm looking forward to, American Gods is finally coming back, woo! Which I'm very happy about. I loved the first season. I thought it was really solid, whimsical, scary. Like, it was everything I wanted it to be. But there was a lot of issues right after season one wrapped. So I didn't think it was going to get back on track. They released a casting bit here and there, like once every, I don't know, 3 months. So I just assumed it was gone. I assumed it was a dead project trying to tread water. But
especially when Gillian Anderson left.
Yeah, that was not a good sign. So they figured it out. They're replacing her very intelligently. And I can really appreciate that. But Good Omens also dropped their trailer. And it just looked fun as hell. I'm so excited. It really pumped me up.
Yeah, they both look good. I definitely need to rewatch season one of American Gods because, I mean, by the time this one comes out, it will have been like 2 years.
Absolutely.
As amazing as it was, I don't quite remember the details of where we left off. So right.
I get that.
I'll want to rewatch that, but still looks good. Definitely excited that it's actually happening. So,
The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, also on Netflix, had a new trailer. And this looks like kind of what Buffy was back in the 90s, a kitschy horror show, and should be a lot of fun. And then lastly, the new
Star Trek!
Star Trek! Yeah, they showed Spock!
They did. Star Trek Discovery dropped a new trailer for season 2, which now has an official release date, which is January 17th. We talk all about it on this week's episode of Adventures and Runabouts that comes out Friday, episode 45.
So we won't go into huge detail, but it was a good trailer. Like, yeah, all of these were really good trailers this week. They cut them really well.
Yeah, it was really fun. I'm looking forward to it. There's a lot of little Easter eggs in that trailer for all the Trekkies out there. But yeah, we talked about it on Adventures and Runabouts. So.
All right, next up. So the 13th Doctor, played by Jodie Whittaker, her first episode debuted this weekend. 8 million international viewers. It's one of the highest debuts for a new Doctor for any of the Doctor shows. So it was, you know, really cool to see that. Mattel dropped their new Barbie for the Doctor. So that's really neat, too. A lot of positive reviews on it as well. I think 13 is going to have a really good run.
Yeah, early reactions have been very positive. I haven't watched it yet myself, but everyone I know who's watched it has been really happy with it. Mm-hmm. And these are people who've, you know, grown up with Doctor Who and watched it their entire lives. And if they're happy with it, that's a good sign.
Writers, former directors, things like that.
Yeah, I'm not a Doctor Who fan, but I've seen the same feedback that you guys have. Facebook friends posting, and everybody seems to like it. So,
yeah,
it's hopefully going to be a good season for everybody.
So, in some sad news, Scott Wilson, who is, as of now, best known for Herschel from The Walking Dead, he does have more than 50 acting credits to his name. So, go check out his IMDb. But he passed away this weekend at the age of 76. Was really sad. I know you and I have watched Walking mm-hmm. Dead, and he was a good.
He was probably the only character that was better than his comic book counterpart in the show.
Absolutely,
so. That's high praise, though.
They kept him around a lot longer because he was more compelling mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah, and he's been to our area for conventions a couple times, and
yeah, I got to meet him at Crypticon that 1 year we went.
Yeah,
he's a good guy.
The only year we went.
Accurate. Shazam Gate 2018. Ryan, over to you.
Nothing, guys. Dry week for Shazam Gate.
Movie's still coming out.
Very excited. He wants to fight The Rock. You guys talked about that last week, but other than that.
I want him to fight The Rock. I want to see that on-screen battle so bad. I want it to take 30 to 45 minutes.
Yeah, they could literally just call it Zachary Levi versus The Rock,
yeah,
and have them wear their costumes, and they don't even have to act in character. Well, so Zachary Levi's always in character.
What would you rather see, Zachary Levi fight The Rock or Shazam fight Black Adam?
I mean, can we get? Why do we have to pick one? Exactly. A little from column A, a little from column B.
So, I have to ask you guys, just brief tangent. Do you think The Rock is Skyscraper was a huge disappointment?
Baywatch was a huge disappointment.
At the box office this year. I didn't see either film, so I don't know if story-wise and movie-wise they were a disappointment. But Do you think The Rock is kind of overstaying his welcome? They tend to add him into... No.
I don't think he's overstaying his welcome. I think he's just picked a few bad movies. And
that's right.
He does so many films every year now that it's not going to be all good stuff. The Jumanji made a fortune at the box office. It was a December release, but most of its money was made in 2018.
I only bring this up because recent critics have called him the Rockbuster for Blockbuster, as well as Blockbuster Viagra. So those are terms that I feel like you're pushing your bubble if you're getting those terms, but I don't know. I could be completely off about this.
I mean, it's been a long time since we've had a single actor who had that type of like draw for summer blockbuster type stuff, because we don't really have that type of movie scheduling system anymore. But his movies are still pretty successful. Rampage made a good amount of money, too.
It did. It made a lot of money. And it wasn't half bad. Like, it was fun to sit and watch. It was exactly what you expect it to be. And that's fine. Like,
I mean, the problem is you look at a movie like Skyscraper, and you're talking, if you're talking to me, a guy who just loves 80s action flicks, and Die Hard is one of my favorite movies, and you watch the Skyscraper trailer, and you're like, that looks bad. You know, I'm not going to go see it just because The Rock is in it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't go see any movie just because of an actor. There's obviously going to be a few exceptions. But, yeah, I mean, I like The Rock, and if he's in a movie that I'm mildly interested in, that might push my interest level a little bit more.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, I don't think he's overstayed his welcome. I think he'll like, sink back a little bit, maybe do a few less movies that are hopefully more successful, be a little pickier with his roles.
Yeah.
But
I mean, Rampage is a good example. If it had been a non-A-list, no-name actor as the lead in Rampage,
mm-hmm.
I probably would have just said, it's going to be a terrible B-monster movie. But because it was The Rock, I was like, well, giant monsters destroying stuff and The Rock? Okay, I'll go see that. Right?
Yeah.
So, he still draws people.
Perfect. So, moving on. Today, we got to see our first look at Ruby Rose as Batwoman for the CW crossover Elseworlds, which will happen sometime in December. I don't have the exact date off the top of my head, but that's always when they do. The 9th?
Is when the crossover begins.
Okay.
Yeah, so four episodes or three episodes.
It's three this year. Legends of Tomorrow is not participating in the crossover for whatever
reason. Too bad they're not doing Black Lightning, considering it is Elseworlds.
They still don't want to cross over those two shows, that show with the other.
They are bringing Superman in for every episode.
Yeah.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Of the crossover.
All right.
I mean, I'd rather it be Martian Manhunter, personally.
But yeah, but he'll probably get left out again. He just conveniently can't be there for anything.
His CGI costs so much compared to everybody.
But like, it's not even, like, a lot of it is practical now. They did his work practical, too. It's the transformation is CGI, right? But just have him be in his alien form for the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, just have him do it off screen.
Yeah, that's fine.
There you go. What do you guys think of the costume?
I love it.
I think it's very comic accurate. I mean, I'm not a big comic reader, but I've seen a lot of art, and she always... I think that the cowl might be a little more aggressive than what I anticipated it being, but in the comics, she's a very aggressive personality, and the cowl kind of suits that.
Yeah, the woman's very aggressive.
It isn't like a mask. Like, I feel like in the comics, it's more of a mask, whereas this one's more of a cowl that goes back behind the back of her head.
I think it has, like, an exposed top, too, so like the hair can hang out.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think that makes more sense from a practical perspective, though. Right? It's less likely to get knocked off, you know?
I don't disagree.
Like,
I just, in the comic books, it seems like it's mostly a mask.
I don't know. Ollie's mask never comes off. Ollie's hood never falls back.
That's true.
Flash's cowl gets torn off all the time.
Yeah, and he can just go, and then it's off. And if you've ever worn a cowl, that's not how it works.
I know. It's ridiculous.
You have to lube up your head.
Sometimes, depending on the cowl.
I think this vision of it is incredibly comic accurate, but also realistically practical.
I really liked it. My favorite part was the cape, because it had this ombre look from black to red. And I've never seen a cosplayer do that. I've never seen the comic books do it. So it was its own new touch.
There's a lot of people complaining about the length of the cape, right? That sounds like such a petty thing, but you know how people are. They got to find something to critique. And it does seem a little short, but I mean, she doesn't really, in the comic books, have a Batman-length cape most of the time. So I don't think it's that big of a deal. I liked her bracers being as, like, kind of simple as they were. The only thing I wish is that her gloves and bracers were the same red as everything else. I feel like that would have made it pop a little bit
her
more.
Her belt's
the boots.
Different from the design on the chest, too.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's overall, I'm very happy with it. it's a really cool costume, and I'm hoping some cosplayers do it because it looks really neat. I want to see it.
I like that they definitely steered right into the red hair.
Yeah.
Like, it's not kind of red.
No, it looks like very much, you can tell it's a wig, and I hope they lean into that because in the comic books, it's obviously a wig too, and they don't try and hide that, you know? So, yeah, making it look fake is fine with
part of the disguise.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. So, it's cool that she has her own bat signal up in the sky in the background. Mm-hmm. I thought that was kind of neat. So, definitely looking forward to seeing her character.
So, lastly, James Gunn is 100% writing Suicide Squad 2. They confirmed that today. And they're still in talks, but he may be directing Suicide Squad 2. Thoughts?
I think it's hilarious.
Right?
I mean, like, it's just so funny, that this kind of back and forth. And there's been stuff that's gone the other way, too. But, of course, this one's kind of high profile. But, I mean, yeah, he's a guy who made a very successful ensemble film with characters nobody really cared about. Well, Suicide Squad wasn't that well received. Now he gets to do it again.
I think it's kind of funny because the Marvel fans are like, oh, the Warner Brothers picking up our scraps again. DC Comics picking up the Marvel scraps again like they did with Joss Whedon. And then the DC fans are like, this is cool because he did a great, really cool movie for Marvel. So I feel like there's a lot of animosity going one way, not the way I would have anticipated. And then the other way is really kind of excited. So
Batista's sticking his foot in his mouth. He's saying that he wants to join
Suicide Squad.
Yeah. He just wants to say dust at this point. Like, he's not coming back.
You know what? I like him as an actor. I like that he stands by his principles, whether I agree with him or not. And, you know, if they want to bring him in for Suicide Squad, we need a new Killer Croc, right?
I mean, do
King
we?
Shark.
No. King Shark would be
awesome. King Shark.
King Shark. So I thought our Killer Croc was actually one of the better parts.
Yeah, I mean, he was well done. He won an Oscar for it. So.
Oscar-winning Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
But the James Gunn thing is kind of funny because I think it's the same Marvel fans who are trying to sign petitions to get Disney to go back on their decision are probably the same people who are really mad and making fun of the DC for picking up their scraps because they're pissed that they don't have James Gunn anymore.
I mean, I'm kind of pissed about it. It sucks. I was totally for James Gunn reaping the consequences until it was pointed out to me that he has already apologized for it, you know, 2 years after it happened, as well as the fact that Disney knew about it. James Gunn was very upfront and said, hey, here are my skeletons, here's what I'm doing. So, now Disney just looks like a bunch of assholes.
It's totally disingenuous from Disney's part. It was a CYA thing when they felt like they were getting bullied online by a bunch of white supremacists anyway. So the whole thing is silly. And I'm glad to see that James Gunn's still going to get work over it because, you know.
He deserves it.
Yeah. I'm not happy with the quote jokes that he made back then. But yeah, he did apologize for him long before he became the A-list director that everybody now knows. Mm-hmm. And people were aware of him then.
And the company that he was working for at the time was well known for edgy and, you know, kind of terrible humor in their movies. So I don't think I don't agree with the jokes, obviously. Yeah. But I think that it was kind of almost expected of the company that he was keeping at the time.
The 2000s were filled with really terrible jokes. I remember sitting at lunch hearing very similar jokes to this, and I remember giggling because I was a dumbass. And the whole point is growing up and realizing that that stuff's wrong. And, you know, you apologize to people that it may have offended at the time, and you apologize for your actions and you move on, and he did that. That's exactly, like, we're supposed to be able to grow and move on. We're not supposed to be infallible our entire lives.
So, yeah, so he's writing Suicide Squad 2.
Right, and it should be a lot of fun. I hope Killer Frost is introduced because she's in a lot of Suicide Squad stuff. Especially
Kana has more than one line.
I just hope she's gone. Like, move her over to Birds of Prey because they'll do something way better with her.
There are some rumors that this may not be so much a sequel as much as just kind of a soft reboot of Suicide Squad and just kind of retool a lot of it.
The squad is always different because there are new prisoners in all the prisons.
Even in Arrow, every time they've had the Suicide Squad on there, there might be a couple people that carry over, but it's a lot of new people every time, it seems like. So, I mean, that they did a good job on the TV show with it, and I wish that would translate to the movies. Of course, you know, Deadshot's going to be in it. Harley's probably still going to be in it.
Those two are good.
Yeah, if Margot Robbie and Will Smith want to be in your movie,
I think, honestly, a lot of the characters were pretty... All of the acting, I didn't have any issues with any of the characters. It was all of the writing and the... And
yeah.
Other than Enchantress, the whole dance thing was a little weird.
Jai Courtney was surprisingly amazing as Boomerang. Like, he was really good. I liked him as a villain. I want to see him come back at the very least.
And Diablo, I thought he was well acted, even if he didn't really like the character. I mean...
I didn't like Captain Exposition, whatever his name was.
No, Rick Flag was awful.
Rick Flag. Okay.
I hope they remove Rick Flag. I hope they remove Enchantress from this, because they didn't do those characters right. I hope Kitana gets repurposed somewhere else, because she's a hero. Like, what is she even doing there?
She was protecting the good guy.
Which was stupid. It was a dumb part. They just wanted another woman because they looked bad. So, you know, whatever you want to do with everybody else, but...
Yeah. Fair enough.
Okay. So, before we go, we're going to play a little game.
Ooh.
Every week I ask you guys a question starting a few weeks ago. So, you know, long-standing tradition. This week we're going to do a play on Kill, Marry, Bang. And instead, because I don't like objectifying women all that much.
So it's going to be men.
It's for you two. No, for you two only.
Oh, fine. Rachel doesn't have to participate. Huh. Convenient.
Out of the Gotham City Sirens, who's your best friend? Who's your partner in crime? Who's your wifey? That's the question.
Gotham City Sirens are Poison Ivy, Harley Quinn, and Catwoman?
Yes.
Okay. Can I get a pen, Derek?
Yes.
I'll get you a pen, Ryan. I'll get you a pen.
So, we're going to take a quick break for advertisements, because we're sellouts.
No, don't frame it like that.
We are sellouts.
We're plugging other shows on the network. These aren't like...
It's quick. We'll be right back.
We are getting paid by the other shows.
Sure. Yeah. I'm paying myself for the other shows.
Right.
That makes sense.
Real quick, though, for anybody who watched last week when we had Eric on and we ranked the Pixar movies, you might have noticed that we never answered the question Ray posed to us in that episode because we forgot. So next time Eric's on, we promise we will answer that question. So you'll just have to
Saving it. I think it's unfair to not include him because he's probably just, you know, chomping at the bit to answer.
Yeah, he probably loses sleep
every night. Every night, yeah. All right, so we're going to take a short break. We will be right back, everybody.
Do you like Star Trek? Because over at Red Shirts and Runabouts, part of the Heroes Podcast Network, we absolutely love Star Trek. Join us every week with me, one of your regular hosts, Gregory Bosco, as we talk about your favorite characters, your favorite...
Welcome back, everyone. So, now that we are to the meat of our segment, we are going to be reviewing Venom, talking about our favorite parts, our non-favorite parts, what we thought of the overall film. So, this is your spoiler warning. We will be talking about the entire film. So, start to finish, post-credits, credits, whatever, we're going to talk about it. Like we said, it dominated the box office. Derek believes it's the highest October box office that's ever
opening weekend. Yeah, I think it had the highest October opening weekend ever, which is cool. It had the highest Thursday preview of any October movie ever. And it rivaled some really big movies. So it made a $10 million. Thursday night for its first night, and to put that in perspective,
Deadpool and Wonder Woman, you said,
and Captain America: The Winter Soldier. Wonder Woman was like the highest at like 11. Winter Soldier was I think 10.6 or something like that. So like it was in pretty good company for a preview night, which was a little surprising since a lot of our theaters locally were fairly available if you wanted to see it. But yeah, it had a very very good opening weekend financially. All expectations, made over $200 million internationally.
205. Yeah, that's great. Good for the movie. So we can pretty much guarantee with those numbers, a sequel or a spinoff or something connecting it will be down the pipeline, possibly 2020.
Yeah.
And
we already know who's going to be in it.
We're going to talk about that. I did do the spoiler.
This is why I don't pay attention at all.
it's Woody Harrelson.
playing himself.
Just Woody Harrelson.
I'm fine with it. He's actually playing his character from Cheers. Woody.
Oh, I was thinking he was going to be playing his character from Kingpin.
Perfect. I love it.
With one hand.
I love it. Okay. So, let's talk about the film. What did you guys like? What did you not like?
I actually really enjoyed myself watching this movie, so I'm probably going to be less harsh on it than the average person.
Which means it's going to be arguing with me the whole time.
No, I'm not arguing. Look, it is a silly freaking movie. It was. Is, I understand now when critics were saying that it feels like it doesn't belong in this decade. I get it. It feels like the first Spider-Man. You know, it feels old as far as the way the storytelling goes and the jokes.
It reminded me of the first Ghost Rider a lot. Sure. A lot.
I was actually going to say it felt... I read some of the reviews of people saying that it felt like an early 2000s movie. I was like, how could it feel like an early 2000s movie? But yeah, Ghost Rider specifically, and mm-hmm. I didn't get as much of the first Spider-Man movie.
It's a little cheesy, but not in like the epically amazing way like Spider-Man 2 was.
I got more of like Fantastic Four and
yeah, Ghost Rider. That bad. I definitely don't think it was Fantastic Four bad.
Okay.
The first Fantastic Four wasn't that bad.
Right.
The second one with Silver Surfer. Silver Surfer was the only good part. There was a really obnoxious dance scene. And Jessica Alba was even more CGI to look like a Aryan woman instead of the beautiful Hispanic woman she is. So that was off-putting. But Silver Surfer was fantastic. Doug Jones,
yeah.
The first Fantastic Four was bad enough that I didn't see the sequel.
Oh.
Whereas this movie, I would go see a sequel. So that in my head, that just means I enjoyed this one more.
All right.
Sure. Well, I mean, I made no secret that I like Ghost Rider. And yeah. I like Fantastic Four. And I did enjoy this movie. It was, I would never say it was a good movie, though.
I didn't say it was good. I said I really enjoyed myself.
And I didn't say I really enjoyed myself. I enjoyed it some. But, I don't think the things I laughed at were necessarily supposed to be the things that were laughed at.
That's what I think. I caught myself laughing at moments and nobody else in the theater were laughing. And I was like, oh, I'm the asshole. Okay, that's fair.
And I don't think you are. I think that it's tough to tell how they're framing it.
I can't.
Honestly, it wasn't memorable enough, really. I think of some of the dialogue between Eddie and Venom was like, it was so bad that made it funny to me.
See, I thought it was like the way that came off definitely felt like it was supposed to be
Venom. Some of it funny. Did.
I mean, I felt like it was all supposed to be funny.
I didn't know that Tom Hardy and Riz Ahmed did the voices for the Eddie Symbiote. Brock and Riot.
The symbiote.
I had no clue that they were doing the voices for that. And that made me love it even more, the fact that they did all the voices. I know it's heavily digitally edited.
Yeah, I watched a video from the director, and he said that Tom Hardy would actually, right at the very beginning of the day, record all his lines as Venom and as Eddie Brock. And they would go through real quick and cut out all the Eddie Brock pieces and put an earpiece in them and play back the scenes he had just acted out so that he was actually talking to Venom in his ear.
That's cool.
That's smart, actually. Yeah. That's pretty
and cool. I think it worked. I think that was the biggest part that worked of the movie for me was the relationship between Eddie and Venom.
Mm-hmm.
Although it was kind of a weird character shift. I don't know, maybe it was just me that like Eddie in the beginning was like, he's a badass reporter that's like going and not taking shit from anybody. And he's, pushing to get the story and he won't listen to his editor because that's the kind of badass guy he is. And then he turns into this whining, whimpering, like, you know, and I get it. You have something going on with you that makes you a little scared, but it doesn't like completely 180 your entire personality.
I think that was a bad trend for the film. Cause that's not the only flip. No. Venom flips at the end of the movie and just inexplicably.
Now he wants to save humanity.
Yeah, there's no explanation for that at all. And like, I get that they had to do that, but you have to give me some type of reason to believe.
Which makes me feel like maybe some of it is hidden in that 30, 40 minutes of film that was cut. And honestly, if I could, I would have cut that restaurant scene so much. That was awkward and he's just eating all the random things and he gets in the lobster tank. Like, I was laughing throughout most of that and cringing through most of it because it was just, it was poor writing, it was poor editing, it was not great acting from anyone involved and just awkward. So I really wanted that to go away and bring back the stuff that was cut. I'm hoping we get like a Venom cut later with all of that restored.
Speaking of the cut and the editing, when we got the first trailer, it felt like it was going to be a horror movie.
Yes,
and a lot of rumors were that it was going to be a horror movie.
But it didn't get that rated R. Otherwise, we would have seen more of the gore from him eating
people. But would that have made it a horror movie? I mean, the tone really felt like it was going to be a horror. That first trailer really set it up as a horror movie.
The movie is not a horror
movie.
I don't care how many violent scenes they cut from the movie. There's no plot here that's horror.
Right.
It's just not. And whether or not that's a good thing or a bad thing, I guess that's up to the viewer, right? If you wanted a horror movie or not. But I mean, even if that 30 to 40 minutes is all R-rated content, let's just pretend for a minute it had a half an hour of R-rated content in it, that would not have changed it to a horror movie.
Yeah.
No. And I don't even know that that would have necessarily made it a good, a better movie. I think that the R rating, sure, we could have seen like, we wouldn't have seen like a silhouette body thrown away with no blood, right? Right. We would have seen a bunch of blood and stuff, but I don't think that would have improved the movie at all. It still would have been a very mediocre, you know, it would have been what it is still.
I mean, so the audiences have obviously liked it more than the critics have. And I don't think that having it be super violent would have won over any critics.
Right.
Right? I don't think there's any, I don't remember seeing any critic reviews that said, well, if it was only more bloody.
Right. Right? That would have made it all better.
I maintain that the majority of critics are still old school critics looking for the Oscar bait for most of their stuff. You look at A Star Is Born and it's got really high ratings on Rotten Tomatoes by the audience and the critics. But when you look at films like Venom, the disconnect is so large between critics and audience. And that's not the first time we've seen this around. Like Ant-Man and Wasp had a huge disconnect too.
I feel like part of it is that, because I've seen a lot of memes about this last week about Venom, is that people want the critics to be wrong, right? And so, they see a movie that looks really cool in the trailers and they see it getting a 30% on Rotten Tomatoes. And they're like, this movie was totally adequate. But in their mind, because they expect it to be so bad, it seems great. And so they're going on there and giving it this high rating because they want to offset the critics. And I've seen a bunch of memes shared this week about how literally everyone that saw the movie, like, trying to keep the critics away from the movie because the critics literally aren't everyone that saw the movie. I don't understand how that works. But, I mean, I don't know. I think we wanted critics to be wrong on, like, Batman v Superman, right?
Yes.
Because we really wanted that to be a good movie.
And we just want to like things.
Right, absolutely. But I mean, I think that a lot of this is just like people really giving it too much credit because the critics said it was so bad.
If you're a hardcore Venom fan and you went into this and you can step away saying it's an objectively good movie, I say you're blinded.
Yeah.
If you walked into this and you enjoyed yourself because you felt like the characters did the comic book some justice, or because what you saw on screen was a lot of fun for you, then I completely believe you. And that's just fine. And I don't think that a lot of the critics, that the majority of critics, have that same connection as Venom fans.
I think the big problem here is that we use Rotten Tomatoes as an end-all be-all.
Right.
And
everybody does. It's ridiculous.
But it's a yes-no review, right? Rotten Tomatoes was it good or bad? And that creates this dichotomy of we see a movie that's sitting in the 20 percentiles. We're like, well, there's no way it's that bad of a movie, right? Because it probably deserves to be at like 50%. Mm-hmm. And if we saw it at 50%, we'd be like, okay, so it's going to be a mediocre flick.
That's why I prefer IMDb. You
right.
get literally 10 stars. You can do half stars too. And you know, I would have given this like a 6.5 or 7 on the IMDb.
And it's sitting at 7.1.
And that makes sense.
That's where it's saying. So that's lower than Rotten Tomatoes' audience score, obviously higher than the critic score, right? But I think this idea that a movie is either good or bad, and it's a light switch, right? That is not a good way for us to tell people how movies are quality-wise. Because it's not that simple.
Mm-hmm.
Right, there's so many variables that go in here, right? So if you see a movie that's written well and it's acted really well, but the CGI is crap, well, then what is it? Is it good or is it bad? Right? If I say it's good, and then you go and you see it and you see CGI that looks like it's from 20 years ago, then you're going to get on me for saying, well, how could you thought that CGI was good? Right? So we need a more gray system, and I like IMDb for that, but I think that's what causes this disconnect: is the fans are like, well, there's no way it's that bad.
Maybe. I don't know. I just think that people want... It's like Marvel versus DC is critics versus
fans.
And it's turning into that. You know, DC fans got really defensive because of the low Rotten Tomatoes score on Batman v Superman. And Marvel fans, I'm sure, have had similar experiences where it turned out lower. Ant-Man versus the Wasp, I think you just brought up. And I think that, you know, Venom fans and people that are just comic book movie fans in general are probably just like, guys, you know, don't listen to the critics. This movie's great. Go see it. I had a great time. And maybe they did have a great time, but I think that it's really tough to say that that was a good movie. And
fans are also very volatile lately. They want to tank things before they even see it and give it a chance. Like, I've seen so many people talking about how terrible Spock is because he just has a beard, and they won't even give it a chance to explain themselves why it looks like that. So it's just completely unnecessary garbage that comes out of fans lately. Everybody's a critic. Everybody has their own opinion. And because of the internet, they can't keep it to themselves. So there's no informed opinions anymore. It's just straight off, this picture, I see it, I don't like it, I'm not doing it. Or, this is what this guy said about the stuff that I love. Well, screw that guy, I'm going to tank his job and everything else. Like, sorry, you don't get to do that. Just calm down and take the media like everybody else and chill. Like, have an informed opinion. Wait till after.
So while we've taken a bit of a tangent here, maybe this is a good time to address a topic that's been going around quite a bit. Do you think the movie wasn't great because it lacked Spider-Man?
No.
No.
Although, I mean, I think that the character itself just doesn't lend itself well to a solo movie. But I don't know. I actually think about it, it might have saved the movie, but I just don't think the movie should have been made. It should have, if they need Venom, then they should have put Venom in a Spider-Man movie as a villain. And he shouldn't be, I think him as the main character, having Spider-Man as a side character would not work. That's just not.
Right. So I think that maybe that's the issue, is are people saying they want a Venom movie that happens to have Spider-Man in it, or do they just want
a Spider-Man movie with Venom as a villain?
Right. And those are two different things.
For sure.
I like the idea of having them on equal footing, because I love the idea of Peter Parker and Eddie Brock being professional rivals like they were in the comics. That makes them very interesting to be at odds in their personal and villainous and superhero lives. Like, that to me is a fun dichotomy. So, and it would take care of that horrible issue that we brought up earlier, where the motivation for Venom changes automatically and it's a quick light switch. It doesn't make sense.
I mean, I think that it could have worked a little bit more as a solo film if Eddie had more control, right? But from the get-go, as soon as Venom attaches himself to
Eddie, he's the one in control.
Venom's the one in control. And because of that, you have the bad guy in control. And I think you could have done a darker, maybe borderline horror-esque film where the good guy is in control, and sometimes he loses control.
But the right? Venom, I think you would have had comic book fans angry at you for that, too, because Venom was a bad guy for the majority of his run, and it's only recently when the whole Agent Venom thing came up, and he's a good guy.
Well, that's fine, but the movie ends up with him a good guy anyway.
Yeah.
Right? So you've already pissed off that demographic, so you might as well write it well. Right?
That's fair.
If you're going to do it.
Because I feel like he wasn't necessarily a bad guy, even through a lot of his run. He was an anti-hero, right? Like, he had a vengeance against Spider-Man.
Right.
But I think I don't read the comic books. Based on what I've read, he's more of an anti-hero than a straight-up villain. And even with the Agent Venom, he was a good guy.
Yeah.
Straight-up good guy. Yeah. But through a lot of his run, the reason why he seemed like a bad guy is because he was always trying to kill Spider-Man, because the symbiote had a problem with Spider-Man and Eddie Brock had a problem with Spider-Man. So together, they really had a problem with Spider-Man.
And that makes sense.
Right. And so I think if they had played on the anti-hero more and just had gone the horror route, I feel like that could have saved the movie. I don't think maybe the 30 or 40 minutes could have changed the entire tone. I just don't see a way. Like, all the footage that we saw in the movie, I don't see how any of that could fit into a horror film.
No, I don't think so either. I think you have to drastically rewrite the movie to a situation where maybe Eddie is slowly losing control as the movie progresses, right? And there's that horror aspect of him losing himself to this monster that's inside him type of thing.
I would have liked it had the mentality gone, too. They mentioned very briefly that he was sucking the life straight out of his organs. If he was also sucking his sanity, too, it would have been very interesting and could have played along the lines of psychological thriller a bit.
Now, it does fall into something that we've complained about for lots of superhero movies, where the villain is basically the same thing as the hero, the quote hero, right? Where we have another symbiote who has the exact same powers, he's just better at them, but the underdog is the good guy, so they're going to win.
Right.
Right.
I would have liked it much better if those other two symbiotes, the yellow and the blue one, hadn't died and they had also fought. Because,
yeah,
like, it just would have been cooler to see three symbiotes against Venom. And seeing the other symbiotes, like, it's never going to happen where we get, like, a Scream or a Toxin movie or an anti-Venom movie. But, you know, having them be side characters would have been fun.
I actually thought the action was another thing that worked in the movie. Like,
I agree.
You know, the lead up and the drama around the action story, whatever, didn't work. But the actual action looked pretty good. And it was kind of cool.
Forest scene was fun.
Yeah, and just like the general design of the symbiote, you know, character, the Venom or the Rage or
Riot.
Whatever,
Riot.
Riot,
yeah.
You know, coming out to be, yeah, it didn't look cool. You know, just the general design of those characters fighting lends itself to being kind of cool. Although the scene where, like, they separated for a second was a little weird, and I'm kind of like, okay, guys, this is cheesy.
I did like the when Riot basically absorbs Venom and Eddie. I thought that was a cool moment in an otherwise kind of messy fight scene. But the earlier action sequences, like the motorcycle car chase, I thought was really cool.
Yeah, that was fun. And they used the symbiote in interesting ways.
Right, it was unique. It was different. It wasn't just, like, two really strong things hitting each other and sometimes they melt, right?
Well, so back in February, we talked about how the Black Panther car chase lasted a little bit too long. It got to be a little too improbable and we got a little bored with it by the end. This one, I thought it was probably longer in length, but it kept interesting throughout the whole time. Yeah. I wasn't bored during the car chase at all.
Because stuff was happening, right? There's that character interaction between Venom and Eddie that you don't get in a normal car chase because nobody's in your head that you're talking to, right? So it made it more interesting. There's some character growth and development happening in that scene because Eddie has to learn to trust him.
Well, and all the action scenes have that. When you get the first scene in the apartment, this is his first time seeing the tendrils and things coming out of him. So, I mean, he's fighting it and, you know, you see all these things happen that he has no idea what's going on. So that was character growth too. And I really appreciate that. And one of my things about movies is if there's a fight scene, then that fight scene should be doing something plot wise. Like, it should be moving the story forward. And you really got to see that in this movie. It was a good example of that.
That's a really good point.
Speaking of the, thank you. Speaking of the things that would have gone too long, we talked about Black Panther, but in this case, I think that the time without the Venom symbiote went on too long. I was very bored.
You mean the beginning of the movie?
Yeah, like, I felt like they should have had that happen, like, right away, and just that him fighting the symbiote.
It was at least, like, 30, 45
minutes.
It felt like
the first act, for sure.
I mean, I almost fell asleep for part of that, because it was just very boring.
Tom Hardy was the only thing keeping me going through that.
And he wasn't keeping me going, so.
Well, because, like, you have the villain. Okay, so.
Carlton Drake.
He is so.
Generic.
Stereotypically cliched, rich villain. He could have been any Bond villain ever written, and not the good ones.
So, right? I am happy that because it is such a stereotype, he was played by a person of color. That's cool.
Fair.
That was the only cool thing and unique thing about him, because that easily could have went to white man number four. We saw that in Jurassic Park Fallen Kingdom earlier. Rich white villain, you know. So at least they're trying to change up the stereotype just a bit. That's the only part I can appreciate about Carlton Drake. Otherwise, he sucks.
The real problem with his character is, cliches aside for a moment, because I can handle cliche, right? But the switch in motivation from him being one of the most brilliant scientists on the planet to clearly the answer to our survival is to team up with this alien symbiote that destroys us is such a leap of logic to me for a character that clearly, like, had to be level-headed, insane, and intelligent to get where he invented spaceships. Right? Because, like, in this universe...
He's Elon Musk, basically.
But better. Yeah. Because they actually have interstellar travel in this Venom universe.
Yeah.
Right? So he's created interstellar ships that can go to other asteroids and planets, and they find this alien life form, and his first thought is, let's throw it on some people. Like, it's such a leap for me that at that point I'm like, well, now I just, like, now you've lost me.
Now I don't want you today.
This leads me to another problem I had with the movie, okay? The symbiotes themselves and the way they interact with people. Okay?
Okay.
So when Venom attaches to Eddie Brock, he's achieved full symbiosis. And so, yeah. like, it's a big thing. Like, this yeah. like this shouldn't have happened.
Right.
Well, then later, Venom goes to his girlfriend with no problem.
Well, no. That's a short period of time.
Still, the other people died immediately when they were, mm-hmm. when they had symbiote.
And nobody, like, was able to bring out the full.
And nobody was able to, like, make out with somebody while it was going on, which was, that should never have happened. I don't know what.
That was weird.
So
that made me feel awkward.
So here's the thing. The inconsistent part is the guy who died really quickly. Because the woman in the beginning of the movie, the riot symbiote that gets loose, right, follows several people all over the world just fine for long hour chunks at a time.
But they might have all died at that point.
They might have all died at the end, sure. Yeah. But this dude died in like 2 minutes.
Right.
That's the outlier. Everything else is kind of consistent because Venom just has her for less than an hour.
Does that say something about Venom and Riot specifically?
Yeah, maybe each one with the way it interacts with the human is different. I mean, I don't know. But they never really explain
exactly.
that.
Exactly, they don't say.
I think motivation is the key. Riot knew where he needed to go and wanted to keep these hosts alive as long as he could. Venom also didn't want to kill her because he likes her and he likes Eddie. And he needed to get to Eddie and he needed her to do it. So he's not trying to eat her liver and eat her other organs to survive. He's trying to hold out as long as possible to get back to Eddie. Mm-hmm. Right? So for me, that...
But then the first one that killed the guy instantly, he didn't want to live?
I guess in that case...
And also,
I mean, that just, yeah.
Homeless Maria and...
She was surviving.
The gentleman infected with the yellow one. Yes, both of them were surviving for a period of time. Both of them died as soon as the symbiote left their body. Yeah.
And I think that's, we don't know how long they had the symbiotes, those two, right? We really don't know. Could have been 12, 15, 16 hours, which is
no,
tracks
they,
with
they
riot.
Had the times on there.
Oh, okay.
Maria was 4 days.
Oh, okay.
The other gentleman with the yellow one was 7.
So that tracks with Riot's trip around half the world, right? That this, they can survive with someone who's not completely compatible for somewhat of a time. That dude who dies in 2 minutes, I have no explanation for that. I think that was just convenience of showing the risk. To the audience.
Maybe so.
Right?
It's just a lot of like weird things that are never explained, and we're just supposed to accept it.
No, I mean,
so that led me back to like the Ghost Rider and the Fantastic Four. There's obvious plot holes that they just didn't feel the need to address.
In this case, you know, it's all supposed to just show us that Eddie and Venom have a special connection,
right?
And clearly, nobody else could just step in and take that role,
except they can.
Not forever is the idea.
No.
That's what we're supposed to believe, is what I'm saying. Right? Consistency.
She only had it for an hour or whatever you said, so maybe, you know, she could have had it for weeks or months.
But right?
Yeah.
So what else do you guys think did work for the film?
I mean...
Because we've talked a lot about things that didn't work. I think
I don't think there was much that worked. So
the banter worked for me. I liked the banter between Venom and Eddie. I thought
so
it was
the purposeful
fun.
Humor.
Yeah, I thought it was fun. I thought it was different. It was a unique character set, right? Because that's not something you have every day.
How do you feel about Venom preferring tater tots?
Well, that was unnecessary and kind of dumb, personally. But I mean, I did laugh probably. But like looking back on it, I'm going. Rawr.
I mean, it made sense that the symbiotes wouldn't need cooked food, mm-hmm. right? Because they're just eating their hosts alive anyway. And so that worked. I like the idea that this is a way to see that he's not himself. He's eating ridiculous stuff and it makes him really sick because it's not what he's supposed to be
and
doing.
And I'm very happy about that. When he went for that trash chicken and I had to prevent myself from vomiting, I'm really glad that he went and vomited right after because, you know, this parasite in his body is making him just change physically in so many different ways. So I'm very happy that there were other repercussions than just him going like super hungry.
I thought that most of what you're talking about worked. I did think the one that they showed in the trailers that was stop showing the end scenes in the trailers.
Seriously.
But I feel like they just thought it would be funny if Venom said turd. Because that whole line does not make any sense. What does a turd do in the wind? It doesn't roll down the street. I can tell you that much.
It's because they probably had some more vulgar line in the R-rated version, right? And they didn't know what to replace it with.
Maybe so, but it just didn't make any sense. And I feel like we're supposed to laugh at the fact that Venom knows the word turd.
No.
Yeah, honestly, but before that scene actually happened, I'm like, oh, I guess that just didn't make it into the cut. It's what I assume.
Didn't Avengers Infinity War do that, where there was a scene that was released, there's something shown in the trailer that's like from the very end where Spidey died, right before Spidey dies. They showed that in the trailer.
They showed the sad Tony.
Right.
But, I mean, Avengers, Infinity War is a little different.
This was a full scene, though.
Yeah. Infinity War is a little different because they had to hide stuff because they didn't want to spoil things. Right? So you have Tony being sad, but you really don't know why. And the reason he's sad is very different than probably what you thought.
Right.
You show Hulk as part of the group running because you don't want to tell everybody that he's not really going to be in it. Right. But for Venom, like, what's the point in throwing that scene at the end of the movie? Like, it just seems so tacked on.
Well, it's to show that he's now a anti-hero. And then he talks about turds.
It does really seem like they didn't have a way to end the film. So that is what they came up with. Because I truly believe that that scene was originally supposed to be much earlier in the film.
Well, they wanted to follow. I mean, they had set up that scene earlier.
Sure.
And so they needed to pay off on that. But I think that was a weird choice of placement for it to pay off.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was way too late. So here's a question for you. Because I don't read Marvel comics, the two big weaknesses that the symbiotes all have, which is fire, okay, and the sound waves that particular hurts, is that a comic book weakness?
So the fire thing is something that, like, I don't know, it makes total sense that this squid thing doesn't want fire around him. The sound thing they had in Spider-Man 3.
Yeah.
Venom hated
that was in the comic books too.
Yeah, so I at least that's been consistent over all the Venom. 3,
so because I refuse to rewatch it,
that's fine.
Yeah, it's
totally
it.
Fine. Like he,
I'm sorry,
Sandman was worth it.
He gets Venom out of Eddie Brock by surrounding him with all those
metal
pipes
bars.
And like hitting them, and
I remember that
now.
It was completely like bells and metal sounds as opposed to the high hertz frequency.
So then in that case, Venom did it better. That's what 3 did.
Well, they didn't use the sound waves thing really.
Yeah.
They tried to stay away from that because of Spider-Man
probably
3,
yeah,
which I think worked. Yeah.
Venom did a lot better than what Spider-Man 3 did with Eddie Brock. But first of all, the casting,
not Topher Grace, yeah.
Topher Grace is...
Eric Foreman should not be...
I mean, let's just look at where Topher Grace is now. The last role he played was the Ku Klux Klan leader, David Duke, in Black Klansman. So let's just drop Topher Grace from our radar ever, because if that's the only role he can get, he's not worth our
conversation. It's a Spike Lee film, though. It's a little different.
Do you really think David Duke's that important in a Spike Lee film? Like, I'm pretty sure everybody opposing David Duke's more important in a Spike Lee film.
No, but I mean, imagine if you're a white actor and Spike Lee asks you to be in his movie, you probably say yes.
Which is why Adam Driver did as one of the good guys.
I'm just saying, you know, you gotta get work. I don't know if it's... I haven't followed Topher Grace. I've never really followed him, so I don't know what else he's been doing.
So let's talk about that mid-credit scene where reporter Eddie Brock goes to meet serial killer Ronald McDonald.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so there were rumors before the movie came out that Woody Harrelson was playing Carnage.
Yes.
And we didn't see that the whole movie, so it's like, okay, I guess he's not. But then he shows up. And I think his name was actually in the credits before that mid-credit scene. Yeah, and I was like, okay, that's a little weird.
I assumed it had been cut, but there was something in his contract about him getting credit for work he shot.
Right, well, I'm not saying he shouldn't have gotten credit, but I feel the scene should have come before the credit, because that kind of, if you know what you're looking for, that gives away what the credit scene is right there.
I actually think that's how they should have ended it, instead of that stupid conversation. Like, that could have been your final scene.
Yeah, I don't know why that needed to be a post-credit scene necessarily.
Okay, yeah, so I guess we should talk about that. So, yeah. I think I've said it on the podcast before, but I'm not a fan of Carnage being in a movie. Period.
Just in general.
His character does not lend itself to a movie. He's not interesting in the way that a villain on film should be. He literally is just a psychopath that walks around and kills people, and there's no motivation behind it. He's just a crazy person murdering people with a symbiote.
Child molester, a rapist, a murderer. There's nothing redeemable about Carnage.
Nothing relatable. There's literally nothing that any normal person can relate to about the character. And I think people think his character looks cool in the comic books, and that's why they want him to be on the screen. But that doesn't make a good villain.
No, that's the problem when you're trying to make a movie versus a comic book, is now you have the mass audiences. And what do people who don't read comics know about Spider-Man and Venom?
They know Carnage. They team up for the first time when they face Carnage.
Nobody knows Riot. yeah, you know, unless you read the comics,
right?
You know, right? And you don't know, you know, these all these other symbiotes don't mean anything to the non-comic fan. You know Venom and you know Carnage.
My issue is now the origin of Carnage is going to be incredibly weird because in the comics, Eddie Brock and Cletus Kasady are cellmates, and Eddie Brock escapes because of Venom because he's in there, but he leaves just a little bit of Venom behind. That doesn't work for this character. He brings all of him with him. There's no, like, melting and leaving pieces behind. So then the only option is a new symbiote has to come from space and attach to this asshole. And, like,
they should have at least shown a red symbiote to, you know, absolutely, at least set it up. They could have escaped or something.
That's how hard would it have been for there to have been a fifth one and be like, oh, yeah, we never found it.
They didn't even need the yellow or the blue. It could, one could have been red. And it could have had such a ridiculous effect on these people. Instead of just, like, eating their livers or something, like, they could have burned out in seconds. Or, you know, it could have changed their entire personalities immediately. Like, they could have shown that Carnage was, or the red symbiote was very violent and excessive. So, but they didn't. They've screwed themselves out of a good origin story, so I'm with Ryan. I think it's going to be crap.
It could, maybe, well, there is always a possibility that it's not an origin story.
That he already is infected with the symbiote?
Why is he staying in jail then?
Why did he want to see Eddie Brock?
That was a plot issue for me too, because Eddie Brock's this hard-hitting reporter, now he wants to go visit a serial killer? Like, if they retcon that in the next movie and make it so that it's because he's already a symbiote and, you know, was that just wanting to be another symbiote.
Be the only reason why he says that stupid word Carnage. I hate when people say the thing. I hate
say
it.
Their name, yeah.
I hate it. Don't say the thing.
Peter Griffin, he said the thing, he said the thing.
That's how I feel. He said the thing. Like, I hate that. So
I couldn't decide whether I loved or hated the prosthetics and wig for Carnage. Because, I mean, he is a ridiculous looking character in the comic books.
Stop it.
In the comic books, he does look ridiculous. He has a weird fit-shaped face. He has, like, crazy red hair. They want you to know he's a crazy person.
I didn't know his prosthetics.
He had, like, a weird chin prosthetic, I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
They made him more gaunt. Like, he had been sitting in prison for years.
See, I thought it made it look like it was, like,
more squared off,
wedged out, like, reverse. I need to see it again, because it was really bothering me, the shape of his face. I'll watch it on YouTube or something when the movie releases.
But why? Like, Woody Harrelson has played intimidating before, and if you don't believe me, go watch Natural Born Killers right now. He is already...
Or White Men Can't Jump.
Right, I mean, he can bring out the scary if he wants to bring out the scary.
She went right with it.
I did,
He was a great villain in War for the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
You know, he's a good actor. That's not the problem.
You can bring out...
That's a weird setup.
It was.
What was he writing on the wall in blood? Hi, Eddie, or something?
Yeah, welcome, Eddie, or, you know.
And that's what makes me think maybe Carnage is already there. And
he's not just a psychopath?
The only acceptable thing, and it's still lazy plot.
Part of me is thinking, you know, maybe somehow he found out about the space crash, and so he just wanted to bide his time until he could get in contact with these other symbiotes, you know, type of thing.
I don't know. That seems like a lot of stretching.
Am I giving him too much credit? Maybe? Yeah. I don't know.
I think you're taking a really long walk something that is not going to make sense. I mean, I guess they could retcon it to make it make sense, but right now, as of now, I don't think anything that happened in that mid-credit scene makes any sense.
That's fair.
I guess
it was just a setup for the second movie if they go that route.
It's clearly all that it is.
All right, so
there's the final post-credit scene,
which had nothing to do with the movie.
I don't think we should really spend a lot of time talking about it. It was a scene straight out of
a promotion for
Into the Spider-Verse.
The new Spider-Man movie, yeah.
We're all three really hyped for that. It looks like a really
that scene
fun
did,
movie.
I'm going to be honest, that scene did hype me up more. Yeah. I thought it was really good, although I kind of hate seeing a full scene before a movie releases, because then when that scene comes on, or when you're watching the movie, you're like, okay, when's this scene happening? You know, and then you're like, I've already seen
this.
That's
why I'm not too happy with the extended Aquaman trailer, that whole scene in the Sahara.
And a piss joke? Yeah, come on. How many do we need a piss joke in every DC movie now? Is that what it's going
to be? I didn't even think about that connection, actually. That's kind of interesting.
Sorry.
sorry.
Did I just do that to you?
No, I never had thought about it. No, because sometimes movies will have done this, but it's literally the beginning of the film. Like when Tron Legacy came out, they did a special 15-minute preview. Well, it was the first 15 minutes.
Doctor Strange did, too. We saw that.
Exactly. And that's
a little different.
Well, right, because it's not just some scene later in the movie where you're trying to guess when it's happening. It's just you're getting it out of the way. We just want to show you the beginning.
They did that
movie.
For The Dark Knight, too, if I remember right. When that came out, they released the whole, like, bank heist scene ahead of time.
But that's different because we all went into it knowing that it was a chunk of the movie. We had no clue what that final scene was. So we were kind of duped into it a bit.
It was weird to have a post-credit scene for a different...
As a promotion for a completely different, unrelated movie.
And it does kind of piss me off that fans were like, Spider-Man's truly in it. Guys, come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
We knew he wasn't going to be in it.
Come on.
Oh, we saw him on set. Okay, I'm sure they did.
Sure. Whatever. I completely believe that Tom Holland has been to San Francisco where they shot. Anyway, let's do our letter grades. Ryan?
73.5%, somewhere between a C and a C-.
Okay.
Wow.
Derek?
Okay. I was going to go with a C. Yeah.
That's where I'm at.
It's fun. It's certainly not, offensive to me in any way as a movie. I wasn't mad about any of it. It's fine. Maybe it's because my expectations were so low, I expected this to be a dumpster fire, and it wasn't.
That's true.
So
I think we all predicted it to be, in our bottoms when we did the prediction for what movies were going
to
be popular this year.
I gotta listen to that
episode
again.
Yeah, I think we all picked it to be a flop.
I mean, it helps that there wasn't a lot of competition this month in October, right? I mean, A Star Is Born is a very different kind of movie.
Yeah.
Right? Smallfoot, of course, is a very different kind of movie. So, if you wanted to see a big blockbuster film.
I think that's why all three did really well this weekend, because three completely different audiences went to go see them. So there's no reason why any fans stole fans from somebody else.
Please, yeah.
But yeah, it's a good C movie. I will probably purchase it and watch it when I need a good laugh, because it did. It made me laugh, and it's probably going to make me laugh, and I don't care if it's because the joke was on purpose or the bad writing made me giddy.
Now, if you want to sell this Blu-ray, you add a commentary track that's Eddie and Venom.
Oh, that would be fun.
Then you definitely get people to buy that movie.
That would be fun.
I would rewatch that movie just to listen to that commentary track.
Side note, I think this is the closest all three of us have ever been on a score or on a letter grade for a movie.
Probably. Yeah.
Which is funny.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of arguing here. We mostly agreed with each other. Yeah. Okay, guys, answer your questions.
We didn't slam the villain as much as I wanted to, but...
it was awful. Thank you. Slam. Answer your questions. Who's your bestie? Ryan?
There was only one left at the end, so it's kind of by default. My bestie had to be Harley, which if you listen to this, you know that I'm not a big Harley fan, so that kind of hurts my soul a little bit. And if I have to pick the Harley, I want the Harley after she left Joker and just kind of became friendly with Black Canary and some of the others. It seems much less annoying at that point. So
good call. Who's your bestie?
I picked Harley too.
Okay.
I think she'd just be fun to hang out with,
Okay.
She's nuts, but
Ryan, who's your wifey?
Catwoman.
Nice.
Because I don't really want a psycho for my wife, and I don't really want Poison Ivy because she's a little more too risque for my taste, I think, in general.
And
that's why Ivy's my wife.
Okay, fair enough.
Think about it, because then it leaves your partner in crime. Catwoman would be my partner in crime. She's literally a cat burglar. That's what she does.
Well, Poison Ivy is my partner in crime because she's the only superpowered one and can do all kinds of crazy shit.
She's really good.
Literally the most powerful of any of the
three.
We're
not arguing. This is your own personal pick. It's not a fight, guys. It is
a fight because I picked the most powerful one to be my partner in crime because we're doing crime.
How dare you, sir? Yeah, not world-ending plans.
Maybe
apocalypse.
That's the kind of crime I want to do.
Well, then we have a problem, sir.
No, we don't.
Swamp Thing would be so disappointed.
No, he wouldn't. He loves Poison Ivy.
They are really good friends. Alright, guys. That wraps us up for this episode. Let us know what you thought of Venom in the comics.
In the comics.
Are you a Venom comics fan? Tell us. Let us know. Feel free to hit us up at Heroes Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can contact us at any time. Also, check out our Patreon. If you are a patron, you get direct access to us all day long through our Slack channel.
You may get someone to respond even, which Hey, I don't know. You could be one step ahead of Derek if you could do that.
It's been a little quiet in there, you know, so the more people we get in there, the more conversation we can have. It doesn't have to have anything to do with our podcast.
Now, we talk a lot about pop culture, so join in on some of the conversations. My masculine and handsome hosts, where can they find you guys?
Well, first off, I just wanted to plug our topic next week in case anyone needed to prepare for it.
I wasn't going to do that yet, but
okay. You're going to do that at the end?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Well, then I am the Star Trek dude on Twitter, and I also host Red Shirts and Runabouts, our Star Trek podcast. So you can go check that out.
Absolutely. Fabulous. Ryan.
At Buster Props. I don't host anything other than this, and I barely host this. So thank you for making me feel inadequate, Derek.
You're welcome.
I am at Siren Ray on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, so you can hit me up there. Next week, join us for another episode of Screen Heroes live on Twitch. We are talking Cable Guy. This is Ryan's pick for our Fill Our Holes segment, and Derek is the only one who hasn't seen it. I haven't seen it in a good, like, 10, 15 years.
I watch it, like, twice a year, so...
This should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to rewatching this. Yeah, watch it. Join us next week. We'll see you then.
Bye.
Bye.